You're tuned to North Fork Works on WPKN Radio, and I'm Hazel Khan. I'm really happy today to introduce you to filmmaker and Greenport resident Jim Morrison, who will be talking to us about his films and what Greenport means to him. So welcome to North Fork Works and WPKN, Jim.
Thank you, Hazel. Thank you for having me on the show.
Yeah, I'm happy you're here. Let's start with you talking about your hometown, which is well known to visitors who are looking for a great seaside place. They come here to spend a day, a week, a vacation. But the view from a resident and from a family side to actually be from Greenport can be quite different. So Jim, tell us, what does it actually mean to you to be from Greenport?
Well, I originally started down the island in the early 70s. I grew up in Roslyn, New York, and my family had a tendency to move quite often. We always rented. So there was a slow migration up the island. We went from Roslyn to Patchogue, Medford, to finally Greenport, which we kind of settled. I was a young kid in the 80s when I moved here. I do remember it being very inexpensive to live here. Rents were very cheap. I was always aware of what my parents were paying, and I was actually aware of what they were making financial-wise, which was never very much.
How would you classify what you were growing up in?
Like? We were poor. we definitely were the lower tier of finances, which probably is why we moved around so much, you know, which was actually very tough as a kid because, you know, it wasn't fun being the new kid in the school over and over and over again. And I don't think my parents were even thinking about that. I think about that now, and I wouldn't want to do that to my kids. My kids have been here their whole run, which I like, and I do keep that in mind. But I loved Greenport when I first moved here. It was really weird because, you know, living in Patchogue, it was like there's a middle school. You would see a new kid every day that you didn't recognize who's been going there as well. In Greenport, you know everybody. You know, the graduating class for me was like 35 students. And you can do the whole run there. You can do K to 12 in Greenport school, you know, which my kids have done.
It's still a small place, Greenport.
Oh, yeah, it's still very small. Yeah, absolutely.
How many kids are there now at the school?
I'm not sure. I know it's like maybe a little more, maybe 40, 50 roughly.
Oh, I see.
But not too much more from what I graduated with.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really fit any more kids unless they build onto it, you know.
Mm.
You know, and also when I moved here in the summertime, I was working. I got like a job dishwashing like downtown. And I was like, this place is great because I loved making money. When I lived down the island, it was hard to find a place to work. I always liked to work. And I just thought this was like a weird little paradise, you know. And I loved going into the woods. You know, I don't know. I had a very Tom Sawyer part to me. You know, I loved to play in the woods and go bike riding down the dirt roads. And it was just sort of a little bit of a paradise in my early years.
Mm-hmm.
I know things have changed into my teenage years as you get a little rebellious. You know, you get like, oh, this place sucks. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to do around here. You know, so that's typical. And then I feel like as you get older, you come back around to it. And you find even more of appreciation when you think about all the things you should have been doing when you were a kid. So what is Greenport to me right now? I can't say it's a love, hate, it's a like, dislike sometimes. You know, there are things I love and like about it and things I just, come on. It's where my roots are. A lot has happened here for me, you know, since I've been here. I wasn't born here, but I was here the majority of my life. I'm 53 right now, and I moved here in my early teens. This is all I know.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're just feeling less passionate, less intense about Greenport?
I try to keep myself in check. I live in a town where people visit. I would visit this town if I didn't live. And with the frustration, I got to remember, you know, I'm lucky. I live here. I live a walk to town. I could be at the beach in a couple minutes. I could go, hey, you know what? I want to go to the Sound. I could be at the Sound in just amount of time. I could be on the bay or these little inlets that I know about that, you know, a lot of other people don't know about. I could just drop my kayak. You know, I can go to the Orient Point. It's just, there's just so much out here, you know.
You are a filmmaker.
Yes.
And two of your films were featured recently, or was it only one of them, at a Greenport festival a month ago?
It was a festival that I had started. It was more of an excuse to show my film, but I incorporated other Greenport High School alumni filmmakers. Not on this kick to make it all about myself. I wanted to bring in other audiences and just bring in more people, make it a fun event instead of just, you know, showing my films. We have been in a number of film festivals. I mean, my first short, The Clam Kid, was in MFI Film Festival in Greenport, the Manhattan Film Institute, which is an organization here in Greenport. You know, and these films do focus on life in Greenport from my perspective of growing up here. I made three short films, and they're all based on this one screenplay I wrote called Clammy James, and he's more of like a Tom Sawyer-like kid, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It focuses on his life and being a poor family growing up in this tourist destination of a town. And they're this last family, you know, everybody has moved out. There's no other locals. But for me to make this as a feature, it takes a lot of resources, which I don't have. So I wrote this screenplay. I decided to take a slice off of it, you know, make a short film out of this one section of the story. And we did very well with it. It was called The Clam Kid, and we played at film festivals all across the country and the world, too. We played in England. And then once that run was over, I decided to take another slice and another slice. So, you know, it was just pick from it what I can make right now, what's doable, you know, because to make a full-length feature would take a lot of resources, which I don't have at the time.
Can you describe what the slices have in common?
There's three films. There's The Clam Kid, Rent a Neighbor, and there's one that's up in submission to film festivals right now that hasn't even played anywhere called I Appreciate Your Concern. They're all different genres. The Clam Kid is a family-friendly film. Rent a Neighbor is more of a slapstick comedy, and I Appreciate Your Concern is a hard-hitting family drama. The only thing that they really have in common, there's humor in all of it somewhere, you know, in all of them. I had to make them as much standalone as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. So what are they about?
The Clam Kid is about a kid who tries to get away from his dysfunctional home. He finds his solace in shellfishing the bays of this seaside town. Upon doing so, he stumbles upon an entitled beachfront homeowner who confronts him, starts yelling at him, ends up calling the police on him. He brings in some other like-minded clammers and they form this sort of protest because he's within his boundaries. He's not doing anything illegal. He has a shellfishing permit. He's taken the legal amount. He's not taking anything undersized. He's doing everything the legal way. And these people are telling him he's not and threatening him and giving him a hard time.
So who are these people?
An entitled second home beachfront homeowner. In real life, I've run into multiple times as a kid and in my adulthood as a clammer. Clamming used to be my job when I was a young kid. Mm-hmm. He kind of represents the many people that I face, just this whole brash, hey, how are you doing? And then next thing you know, they come at you with, tell you they want you off the beach. You can't be out here. I own the water, which nobody owns the water out here. And just being downright nasty. That's pretty much who this character represents.
Why are they like that? There's one person in your film, but they represent a particular mentality or class of people or something.
Hazel, that's a tough one. I mean, because I don't know these people personally, you know, you have this brief meeting with somebody very different than you and they're coming at you. That's kind of all I see, you know.
I want to understand who this kind of character is. We're not talking about a particular individual, but it's mm-hmm. a class of people that you, as somebody who lives here, encounters.
In the story, they're seeing him as a trespasser. They try to dissuade them like, oh, we own the beach. We own this. You have to leave. And that does happen. I mean, they put up false signs, you know, a false sign, no trespassing. And you're allowed to walk on the beach up to the tide line. Some build barriers and you can't do that. And some, like I said, confront people. I've been confronted many a times.
Even now as an adult?
Yeah. I showed up to a place clamming in my kayak. I try to go to places where people can't walk to because you can get the best clams that way. And some guy saw me coming, met me out by the shore, started yelling to me that I can't clam here, that I have to go over to a different area. And I said, no, I have a permit. I'm not taking anything undersize. I'm within my rights. On my way paddling back, I see a cop sitting by my vehicle waiting for me. He called the police on me. I actually had the paperwork from the town of Southold showing that this is legal water. You can go through all the clams that I have right now. They're all perfect size. They're not over 100. At the time, you were only allowed to take up to 100. Everything's within my legal limits here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no. I had to follow up on this. And he actually did take my side on this and let me go. But it was just the whole hassle of it. It was just annoying. I'm just trying to enjoy myself. And you know what? Not for nothing. There are people out there, more so than not, who shouldn't be out there taking without permits, digging for clams, fishing, taking undersized fish. That does happen. This is not necessarily like waving the flag of, you know, leave the fishermen alone. But this is just my own personal story. Mm-hmm. More so, leave me alone. Mm-hmm. This is a few years ago. So it hasn't happened as of late, but I plan to probably go out again this summer. So, but we'll see. And I'm ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we've been talking about Clam Kid. What other films are we talking about right now?
Rent a Neighbor, again, is from the same screenplay, Clammy James. And it's the same family, but different characters kind of shuffled up a little bit. And it's more from the father's perspective. He's like the entitled local. He's a bit of a curmudgeon and just gripes at everybody walking by the house, any tourist of any sort. He lives in an area where there's short-term rentals, let's say Airbnb or Vrbo homes. And he encounters the types of people who come and rent these homes. And this is based on my own experience. Mm-hmm. Going back a few years, the rules were not so tight as they are now. They are tightening up a bit, which is good. But mm-hmm. people were setting up just businesses. Nobody was living in these homes. And it was like, you would never see the homeowner. And it was every so often, you get this unruly group of people coming in, like leaving garbage out on the road, staying up till 3 a.m, singing, drunk, stumbling down the road, just being an absolute nuisance. So Rent a Neighbor's encapsulating my experience with dealing with that. I guess I'm the curmudgeon. I do have a little bit of an inner curmudgeon. You know, I'm not a full one, but, and I made it like a little more comedic. You know, we had a bunch of craft beer loving dude bros coming down the road with, you know, jugs of craft beer. We had the Manhattanite coming in for the day from the city who, you know, a lawyer type who's just, you know, doesn't want anybody in her way, you know, and it's just his encounter with these people. They're lost. They can't find their Airbnb and they pick up his signal at his house and they're trying to locate it. And he has just like a brief exchange with them. You know, he tries to steer them in the wrong direction to like the wrong homes. And it's a fun thing, I think.
Mm-hmm. But it's an expression of a more serious thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not anti short-term rental either. I mean, I myself, as much as I was annoyed by these types of people coming into my town, I visit other towns and I use Airbnb as well. So there was a part of me feeling a little hypocritical. So that's addressed in the film as well. You know, I feel like all of us, most of us are, have been tourists too. You know, we visit other towns, you know, you know, my family and I, we behave ourselves. We respect the rules of the community that we're in. That's the difference. And I think there are a lot of good people who do come here. It's that handful of others that stand out. And it's just like, oh, all these Airbnb, these short-term rental people. I imagine that's everywhere too. So
I'm impressed that you're actually very balanced.
I try to be. Awareness and balance. You need to find that.
You're balanced in the way you portray both the visitors and the residents.
I don't think everything's one way. Like, I've met some nice people, but it's the bad ones that stick out more.
What is it in particular that you want to protect or preserve about Greenport?
It's tough because I don't know what's being preserved. I feel like you could do your best, but almost nothing can stop it. There's constant building. And when they build something, it's huge. They're building massive houses. It needs to slow down, which I know the village is working. There's a moratorium on building in Greenport. Like I said, I don't know too much about it. It's just, I know it's slowed down quite a bit here, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. What is it about Greenport that you care about the most and that your films are expressing when you take on these out-of-towners? What are they doing to Greenport that you don't like?
One thing I don't like is how everything is being snatched up, every home, every property, every business. My kids have no chance if they want to live here. I feel like the people who grew up here, all the kids, the class I grew up with, it's few and far between. I see maybe like one or two around here. The faces are, I feel like they're going to disappear over time. That's probably what bothers me the most, the familiarity of who really grew up here. The people I grew up with, I see that fading out. A lot of people don't live here anymore that I, you know, went to high school with.
Really? They've left because it's just too expensive. They can't.
Yeah, I can't touch on what people's reasons are. It could be college. They got a job somewhere. But there are people who have left here who just can't live here, can't afford to live here. And there's people who have left here because of the frustration of what goes on here. You know, I want to move somewhere quieter. I don't want to live in a tourist destination. Some people just can't deal with that. Mm. You know, I have my days where I can't deal with it either. It's Saturdays and Sundays, which are supposed to be great days. I can't go downtown. I really can't. It gets frustrating. There's a lot of like nonsense going on downtown. Lucky for me, I have an odd schedule where I have weekdays off. I go downtown on the weekday and I really appreciate it at that point. I'm like, all right, it's a little mellow now, but I just cannot go down to the local grocery. I can't even park down there. I have to walk down there, which is fine. But it's just, it's chaos. There's rudeness. There's garbage all over the place. It's just, it's a bizarre free for all on the weekend. So I steer clear. When it's the weekend, I stay home. Mm.
Filmmaker and Greenport resident Jim Morrison is talking about his films. This is North Fork Works and Hazel Khan on WPKN Radio.
We've talked about your films, but I don't really know, how did you come to be a filmmaker?
It's a long process. I mean, I was inspired by my father, who, just like a lot of fathers in the 70s, even 60s, you know, he had a Super 8 camera and he used to sit us down and we do the typical watching home movies, but he did clever stuff. It wasn't just us running around in the backyard, and he would do animations. He would do, like, he was very artistic, and he would do, like, really, really, he had an interesting eye. You know, I remember him doing an animation of pumpkins, and somehow there was one of us coming down the stairs, like, as character, really, really cool stuff. So in my early years, he gave me his Super 8 camera, and I just started shooting with that. He wouldn't really work with me. I would just have to come to him and ask, "Dad, how'd you do the slow motion? How did you do the backwards effect?" And he would just tell me, and then I would find my way to do it on my own, which I appreciate that.
This is with his camera?
Yeah, with his camera, his Super 8 camera. He just mm-hmm. gave it to me, and I took off with it. And I've always found a love for film and writing. I went to the School of Visual Arts in the 90s during, I say, a great era in independent filmmaking. You had the Tarantino movies. You know, Sundance Film Festival was huge. There was a lot of great films coming out around this time. So I really wanted to be a part of it. But then the downside was that, you know, a lot of filmmakers around that time, you had to spend a lot of money to make your film. You either had to max out a couple credit cards, which I was not going to do. So I was unable to make films in the 90s. A lot of that's changed, you know, now that the digital age is here, the technology is unbelievable. I mean, you can, I don't use an iPhone, I use a cinematic camera, but mm-hmm. what you could shoot on your iPhone, the footage looks better than some of the independent films of the 90s, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and the great thing is you can edit it in your own home, you know, which I've done. I've done that. I've made a documentary, I made 4 short films all right here in my town, right here in my own home. As great as that is, now it's oversaturated. Everybody can do it. You know, it's become extremely competitive. It's very hard to get your stuff shown. You got to up your game somehow.
Well, that's why you said you organized this festival a month or two ago in Greenport.
Yeah. With film festivals, you submit to all these things. You get rejected from most. If you get into 1 out of 10, that's great. But I wrote a screenplay. I made a film. I can't have it sit on the shelf. I'm going to do my best to make it shown. If I have to show it at the library, if I have to put a screen in my backyard, I got to show it as much as I can. You know? Like a private screening. I've done that for, like, when I do a cast and crew screening. I did a documentary in 2012. Once its festival run was over, I did a free screening at the library.
Tell me more about submission process for festivals.
I log on daily to a website called Film Freeway, and it's somewhere where you can make a profile of yourself. All your work's kind of put into this profile. And they're linked to all the film festivals pretty much in the world.
Is it expensive to submit?
Yeah, it's very expensive. So you got to really know what you're doing. There's a lot of fake film festivals out there. You got to know which ones are reputable. And you also got to be ready for a lot of rejection. If you submit to 10 and you get into one, you're doing fantastic. Mm. So that's kind of how it goes. Even getting into the top tier film festivals like Sundance, Tribeca, Hamptons, it's very, very hard. You're most likely to get rejected from these festivals. You know, I believe in putting your best foot forward. You have to try.
And then you try again as well, like the next
try again. I've gotten a lot of rejections from all those festivals. Right now, I appreciate your concern, is in submission to the Hamptons, Sundance, Slam Dance. A lot of these festivals, they do like a high production value, which, you know, I try to up each time as I go. But, you know, there's a lot of great mid-tier festivals that mm-hmm. are out there. It doesn't mean give up. If you don't get into Sundance, that's not the be-all end-all. Almost mm-hmm. all of us don't get into Sundance. You know, all of us want to. But all of us don't. There's so many different tiers of it, too. There's very, very low end where you're playing in a bar somewhere. There's some where you're playing in this massive theater with this community audience. We went to Beaufort, South Carolina. We were in the Beaufort International Film Festival. It was just phenomenal. They gave me a screen time at 9 a.m. on a Thursday. I'm like, oh my God, it's like, there's just going to be nothing but filmmakers there. What's going to happen? I show up. It's all community. The community backs this festival. They were all there. And it was an amazing audience. I was like, I just can't believe this. This is great. So you can get the festival experience. You know, you got to find a place for your film.
Right. The submission fees are expensive, right?
Yeah, some are like $20. That's actually really good. I mean, some come down to $12, $15. I know Stony Brook is very inexpensive, but Sundance, I think it's like $40. That's mm-hmm. on the high end. Some $50, $60 even. I know Brooklyn is up there, which I submitted. So, you know, I've tried that angle, like with the Hamptons. Hey, I'm a local. Okay, that's nice. Some of them do care about that. I think they do have a section where they do local films, but there's...
What would your father say if he saw you now?
Yeah, well, he passed away before all this. He would have been my cinematographer. He has an eye that I didn't quite get. You know, when I'm behind the camera, I do find some stuff that, oh, that's what my dad would have done. And I do find stuff on my own, but I feel like he would have been my cameraman if he was still alive. And he would absolutely love this, you know, this whole form thing, because this is what he would love to do, you know.
Mm. Why didn't you talk about these other films that we haven't talked about, that are not the slices from your screenplay? I know you've got two new films that are...
Well, I have a very short film called Kyle versus Karen, and it's its own standalone film. It strays away from the script that I keep going back to. It's a take on the whole Karen meme cycle that's going on. Karen is based on a character. It's always a white woman having a public meltdown on somebody in public, screaming, threatening to call the manager. You know, I feel like the public is hungry for these videos, these memes, and they're very quick to, oh, that person's a Karen, you know, and sometimes it's not just someone freaking out in public. Sometimes it's somebody, I feel like, somebody's having a mental issue or something, and somebody's recording it and like, oh, look at this Karen freaking out. So, I mean, there's a lot of them. There's something underlying there. Somebody needs some help. You know, we don't need to put them on blast and sell them out to the whole internet, you know? So this story, Kyle versus Karen, is not this woman freaks out in public. It's more so putting a face to someone who just happens to be named Karen. They do touch on the stereotypes. And the character Kyle is known as the male version of the Karen. He's, you know, dirt bike riding, hothead, punches holes through walls, drinks Monster energy drink. So I put these two in a room together and had them battle it out. But the other underlying portion is also the social media content creator, and also the people who want to be social media content creators. I feel that could be dangerous. You know, people are constantly snapping pictures of people in public doing something. You know, somebody's eating a chicken in Costco. Look at this person eating a whole chicken. I'm like, leave them alone. You know, people are looking for content that they can make a meme about. They can post somewhere, and it's rampant. So it's this sort of influencer entitlement that I'm kind of touching on as well. You know. Yes, you're allowed to take a picture of somebody in public, but do you? You can make somebody famous for eating a cake in Costco or something, you know? No, I just think it's ridiculous that everybody thinks that I'm going to be this social media mogul and, you know, get rich of snapping pictures of people in public and making comments about them. I just think it's ridiculous.
So you think that's the motivation, is to launch a career doing this?
Oh, yeah.
For financial gain?
I say mostly yes. Because why are these videos posted somewhere? Why are people throwing stuff to TikTok? Why? What are you doing this for? You know, you catch an odd picture or an odd video of somebody, you're not just putting it on Facebook, you're putting it on these like social media platforms. If more people like it, it's going to go viral, you know?
And are you saying that the person of whom this picture was taken,
they can have no idea that somebody took a picture of them? Yes, you're in public, but you still don't have a right. You know, I feel like just think there needs to be some sort of a law, you know?
Mm. So it's an invasion of that person's privacy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But then like, oh, this is my amendment right. And I have every right. I'm in a public spot. And they're right. They're not wrong.
Mm. So they should really restrain themselves.
But they're not. And people look at it as content. It's everywhere. You could spend all day looking this stuff up. So I think it's mean-spirited and selfish. And nobody's thinking about that.
Mm. So Karen, this Kyle.
It's 5 minutes long. And it touches on that whole aspect of it. Because Kyle snaps a picture of this woman who's just having coffee in a shop, and she kind of catches him. He feels a right to her photos, kind of sets her off. He's calling her a Karen, and it's kind of like a little back and forth between the two. I'm not going to tell any too much more because it's 5 minutes.
So. Okay, yeah.
But it touches on all those aspects I was just discussing with you. I encapsulate that as best I can.
Okay, I understand now. Yeah, I look forward to seeing it sometime when it is available. What about the other film?
Sure. And it's called I Appreciate Your Concern. And it is the third part to the Calamity James.
It is.
It is. And this one is more of a darker drama, touches on alcoholism and how it affects this one family. The daughter goes out to feed her chickens in the backyard and finds her father on the ground, passed out. She doesn't know if he's dead or not. And she has to run in and get the mother. He gets up. The daughter and the mother on going on about their day. Meanwhile, this guy is fighting this massive hangover. He's not going to work. They're just going on about their life. So it touches on how a family deals with a situation. Like there is an odd twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stories about recovery. We just wanted to make it a little different. This one's 15 minutes long on the nose. And right now it's in submission to a lot of the big film festivals. Hopefully they like it. Hopefully they stick with it, and hopefully we can get into some of those. But if not, I'm not going to leave it at that. You know, we're going to definitely try for a lot of other film festivals as well. So it could be going into next year before it even plays anywhere.
Do let me know.
We are having a private cruise screening in August, and you are welcome to come if you want.
Oh, I would like to do that.
I'm in the process of trying to nail down a specific day. But when I do get one, I'll email you, and you're more than welcome to come.
Yeah, I look forward to that. You were saying when you were talking about this film, were you including your sister as a producer or?
Yeah, we're a brother-sister team. She's my producer. You know, I'm the idea guy, and she knows exactly where I'm coming from. She does a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and she's the one I go to pretty much for everything.
Was your father also an influence in her life?
I don't know. I may ask her that. Did that influence you? Because she grew up in this. She was sitting next to me as a kid watching these films and stuff like that. And she has a great eye. You know, she'll talk about films, actors. So that's, I like having her on board. She definitely has a great critique, and she makes a great partner in this whole run.
But you don't know if she has the same memories of your father?
She does, but I don't know if in fact, that's a good question, actually. I never thought about that. I'm assuming she did, you know. I mean, I just went a little harder at it trying to make films.
We really do have to wind down now.
Sure.
But I just wanted to mention two things that you told me before we started recording. One was you're also involved with film in your day job in a very different way, right?
Yes. For 22 years now, I've been working for the Showtime channel right here in Long Island. And I work in their main control room where the signal originates from. Over the years now, we've changed hands. Now we're Paramount. So now I'm a Paramount employee. We still handle the Showtime channel. It's definitely the technical field, not the creative portion, which I'd rather be.
Yeah, but you're doing that the rest of the time.
In the rest of my time and my time off, I do keep the creative part of me going, you know. Mm-hmm. Having this job has helped me, you know, live out here in Greenport because I only have to drive an hour. It allowed me to stay in the town that I grew up in, which I'm very grateful for.
And the other thing, such a funny story about your father again, he was present at Woodstock with his camera.
I tell people I was at Woodstock and nobody believes me. My mom was pregnant with me at Woodstock. And as I mentioned earlier, my dad had a Super 8 camera that he brought everywhere, and he had rolls of film ready to go to Woodstock, which he brought, but he didn't have batteries for the camera. And this is not today where you can pull into a 7-Eleven and get batteries. He was upstate New York and there was nowhere to get batteries. So he was stuck with his camera and all these rolls of film, and he could not get any footage of Woodstock.
Well, that's a loss, isn't it?
That is a loss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough one when you think about it. I couldn't imagine like the footage he would have caught, from Woodstock, especially his eye too. You know, he definitely would have been focused on some of the bands and the interesting happenings, you know?
Yeah. Well, Jim, it was time for us to end. Thank you very much, Jim Morrison. I'm so happy that you spent time with us on this program. Thank you for talking about, as honestly as you did, as directly about your experiences, your life as a very dedicated, passionate filmmaker and all the limitations that you encounter. If people are interested in getting in touch with you or seeing any of your work, can you point them to where they would find that?
You know, the best way to connect with me is you could look me up on Facebook, Jim Morrison. I don't have a easy website I can explain. It's a long title. You can find me on Instagram at Clammy James. You Google search the Clam Kid, Jim Morrison, Greenport. You can find me anywhere. And I'd love to hear from anybody. If anybody has anything they'd like to talk about, I always reach out to people. You can always reach out to me, and I would love to hear what people have to say.
Thank you very much then, Jim. I look forward to August when I will be seeing one of your works. Thank you very much.
Yes, it'd be an honor. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye then.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Greenport-based Jim Morrison talking about being a filmmaker. You can hear North Fork Works on the first Wednesday of the month right here at this time or any time at all as podcasts on hazelkahn.com. If you think listening to this interview has been worth your time, please remember that the donate button on wpkn.org will always open at your touch. Thank you very much. I'm Hazel Kahn.